This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Hey, monkeys. Welcome back. You may have noticed the snark monkey here has been on a bit of a hiatus. Been taking some time retooling, rethinking. Let's call this a soft opening with a hard rocking trio. Let's get into it here. This is such a cool story, and these ladies are awesome. Anybody stay all the way to the end of the credits of the Ghostbusters remake from last summer? As any Snark Monkey aficionados may know, I got to talk to that director, Paul Feig, about his career, Freaks and Geeks, Bridesmaids, etc. A lot of talk about film school. You can scroll back a little bit in the Snark Monkey canon and listen to our lengthy conversation from last year. But at the very end credits of the Ghostbusters remake is this song, a cover of the Ghostbusters theme originally done by Ray Parker Jr. and sued by Huey Lewis. And this song was kind of added at the last minute, and you'll hear this story. The band is No Small Children, and No Small Children is made up of three rockin' chicks by night and school teachers by day here in the Hollywood slash Los Angeles area. Lisa, Joni, and Nicola. And they're cool, and they have a great story, and they are on the rise, and they literally do teach kids at elementary school during the day, and then they have a band, No Small Children, and they're touring, and they're, well, we talk about all this. They're so much fun. They have got some dates coming up in Encino and Topanga Days Festival in May in Southern California, in New York State, Ohio, Massachusetts, up in San Francisco. Check out nosmallchildren.com, get their whole story, and they got a new single called Radio, which we will feature later on, and also they perform live for us. So check out No Small Children, an awesome episode, and thank you for coming back to the Snark Monkey. Much more to come here in 2017. Hang with me. I promise you, it's going to be fun. All right, let's go. I've got all three of you here, which is so cool. And we will take a picture later and I'll post it on the site. But you actually kept things consistent by dressing the same identical outfits. I didn't think you would do that for a podcast.
We had our game face. This is our game face.
I've been wanting to talk to you. There's been so much going on with you guys. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
And the hook, of course, we'll just kind of start at the beginning and go from there. But the hook about you guys, of course, is school. It's on your website. Is it school teachers by day and rockers by night?
Yeah.
And that's true. I mean, all three of you, do you still work at the same school in North Hollywood, right?
Yes.
All right. So I realize talking to three people, I'm going to have to either point or ask by name for you to talk one at a time. Or we just do the entire podcast and all three of you talk at the same time.
Unison?
Yeah. We usually are pretty good about dating.
Now she's talking about me.
God.
We try pretty hard not to talk over each other unless it's on purpose, like Lisa's doing.
I really think we should do the entire podcast. How about we start with Nicola? Because are you basically the one that had the germ of the idea to put the band together?
Actually, it came about
when Lisa and I, one Friday, were covering yard duty together.
It was like during recess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was just during recess. I think we had the idea at the same time. Just it was an evolution of a conversation that by the time we were done in our 15 minutes of coverage, we had formed a band, found our name, decided what we were wearing, and realized we needed to go into the studio.
That's amazing.
Pretty yeah. much.
It was just sitting there just waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Was some of it, Lisa, out of some kind of frustration that, I mean, because you've been playing music forever and you've been putting out your own releases for a while and you teach music, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Was there some sort of kind of thing just kind of busting at the seams
yeah,
to
I
do
mean,
that you weren't doing?
Well, it wasn't like we decided to put a band together that was going to be what it is right now.
Yeah.
We decided, you know, it was kind of an imaginary band, you know,
yeah.
and it was kind of like a, Nicola, let's just, you know, be reckless and do this crazy thing and start a band and we'll write songs about eating salad and, you know, so it was like, we wanted to be a punk rock band and we wanted to be trashy and we wanted to just feel like rebels and... So that's really where it started. And then we started writing songs, and then we started writing more songs, and we got Joni, and then it just turned into something. But we, you know, we've had one foot in that ever since.
Right.
You know?
And Joni, so you joined a little later, and you were in New England at the time?
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is where you guys, so I should point out that Joni and Lisa are sisters.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And
we
Nicola,
have the same parents.
Nicola is not their sister, but no. may have a sister or be a sister.
From another mister.
All of that. Sister.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you were in New England doing your own thing and teaching as well?
I was. I lived in Massachusetts where we grew up, and Lisa had been trying to convince me for years to move out, and... We
did
were
you not want to come to stinky old Los Angeles? Is that the problem?
No, not at all.
Oh.
Not at all.
It's warm old Los Angeles from
yeah.
Boston.
Yeah, I had been coming back and forth for about a year to work on a different project. And the last visit before I made the decision to move, it was just gorgeous out. We're sitting in Lisa's breezeway and it's like 70 degrees. And she says, oh, when do you think you might want to make the move? And I look at the weather when I'm about to land and it's going to be like 3 below. I think now's a good time.
Now,
yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do that now. So
you were in the moment you got there. It's like you were also kind of in the groove when you heard about this.
We handed her a bass.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I had come out the summer prior and to work, and then at that point, originally I was going to play guitar in the band, right? And I got demoted to guitar, and it was, like Lisa said, it was just kind of an imaginary thing at first, and then it really took on a life of its own, and they said, okay, you know, could you maybe come play in the band? And my whole life I've been primarily a singer, and I said, well, what would you like me to play? And said, I want you to play the bass. I said, I don't know how to play the electric bass. I'm a strings player, so I can play upright.
Yeah.
And she said, you'll figure it out. So
yeah.
they literally like loaned me a rig. And at first I thought, oh, you know, this should be okay. I'm an instrumentalist. This should be all right.
Yeah.
It was really hard.
Really?
Really hard. I had to practice my butt off. And
it only has 4 strings.
Yeah, thanks, Lise. That's very perceptive.
They gave you the easiest one.
Yeah, right?
Well, honestly, the thing that was really tough was learning how to sing and play bass at the same time. It was like trying to juggle with my feet. It was really
Sudoku.
Tough.
It's like Sudoku.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we first started...
I like that Nicola is such the in the school mode that she's raising her hand to ask a question.
I have to get
yes,
a word in.
Yes, Nicola,
here.
You had a question?
Thank you so much. They are sisters and will fill up all the air in the room given a chance. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
No,
okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
We should talk about this
oh,
later.
Here
yeah.
we go. And
I'm just kidding.
And it was the Snark Monkey podcast that caused the first rift that caused the breakup of No Small Children.
No, but I just wanted to talk about the genesis for a second. I mean, the thing is, if we didn't have an agenda to think about where we'd be today, we just went into a room and had so much fun, and it lit such a fire that our motto was, we just say yes
yeah.
to everything. And then, you know, within 6 months, we started planning further out. But we were so in the moment for the first 6 months that we said yes to every show. We like to say, we counted. I count everything. We played 55 shows in the first 3 months. We were working full-time playing full time and just completely energized from the experience to the point where we looked at each other and we're like, hey, you know, let's start planning our tours a little further out.
Yeah.
Let's start thinking about the next recording we're going to do. Because we put out a recording. We went on tour within 3 months. We had a recording out within 7 months. And then we just kept on just saying yes.
It's almost as if, I mean, you said it was an imaginary thing or just kind of a what if. It almost sounded like a lark at first, just kind of like, let's play. And almost as a, you know, the last thing you guys probably want to be thought of is as a gimmick, although there is a hook to what you do because of who you are and how you look. But then you end up playing, and I think that drops away as soon as people are watching
that's
you play.
That's kind of what happens, yeah.
But it seems like you started it as a gimmicky kind of thing. It's just, let's just have fun with it. But it this is how it happens, right? This is where the magic happens in music, where the last thing you expected, shit just happens, and you're like, we have to take this ride. Yes, Miss Pimental.
The committee recognizes Lisa.
I actually really think that's true. And I think, like, being in L.A., there's a lot of bands that form together with this idea that they're going to showcase, you know, and they almost put the image together. And they just put the cart before the horse a lot, you know? And I think it really feels different when you do it that way, you know, where it's like almost producer-driven rather than band-driven.
Or image-driven. Well, and that's another thing I want to talk to you about. I'll probably reference it this kind of ad nauseum during this because I'm watching my son aspire to be a musician right now. And he's in New York, and he's kind of finding his way and doing it in an organic way and trying to play live a lot and that sort of thing. But he was out here for a while and was playing backup guitar for a pop singer who was doing a lot of radio tours and stuff. And he was just kind of taking that ride. But he was trying to figure out, is there a difference? Is L.A. a different scene? Clearly it is. But he recognized it was like, if I have to brand myself, I have to kind of be the social media guy. I have to be weirdly established in a different way, whereas in New York, where he'd been playing, people were just kind of walking in and seeing him live, and he could go up all the time, and he didn't necessarily have to focus on the image first. He could just concentrate on the songs, and then the other stuff would come. At least that's kind of what he's picking up on.
Well, what I think, and I think we all agree, is that in L.A., people think it's that. People think it's like the Whiskey and Sunset. And, you know, you have to, you know, sell 100 tickets if you want to play. Otherwise, you're just... But what we found as a band, by saying yes to them in the very beginning to everything, which was just... We really made a conscious decision. We're going to say yes to every crappy gig, to everything, you know, every opportunity
that
comes
our
way.
Every great gig. Some of the ones that you think that would have been stinkers end up being amazing.
And we can give an amazing example of that, but I don't want to take away from it. Do you want to continue before?
Well, like...
That's silly.
Yeah.
On a Monday night residency.
Yeah. And there's like five drunk guys in the room. But by the end of it, like we were workshopping our sound. Like we were getting better. We were getting better on the mic, which is a whole nother thing. People were starting to hear about us. It was free. It was cheap. It was, you know, and just that experience alone really helped us be like have a solid sound that sounded like a real organic thing where we were all part of it. You know, we weren't being told really, I guess, what to play or just like manufactured. You know,
right.
It felt, you know, and granted, some of those shows we didn't sound that good, but it's like you need to go through that, I feel like.
Well, you got
to
be bad first, right? You have to kind of put yourself
out there.
Yeah.
You got to
put
experience is the best teacher.
And a lot of people don't put themselves out there in LA until they feel like it's all perfect. Like they practice, get their hair perfect, practice, and then get to a showcase and you can feel that it's not authentic, you know?
Also, too, that we built a relationship with all the clubs where we play, and we understand from their business point of view, they're just trying to fill the club.
Right.
And so what happened was by the fourth Monday of that early day residency, the club was filled, and they turned around and gave us the club for the night, for actually a whole day from 8 in the morning till 9 at night to film our Drunk Creepy Guy video.
Oh, that's good.
And we continue to have a relationship with them. And every bar we go to, because there's a reason they're doing this. And so we're part of the night, building a night for everyone who just has worked so hard and they want to go out and let off some steam. So we work with the clubs to do that.
So when you guys are developing this and you're playing every gig and you're saying yes to everything, you also still have your everyday life and your teacher life and your family life. Yep. I mean, how is that being handled? Because that's a lot to take on.
It is a lot to take on. And, you know, we get asked this question a lot. And what you often hear musicians say when they speak about their other job is that that's their day job. Mm-hmm. That's their other job. And
also something that they know they're never going to do professionally or for long term or whatever.
Exactly.
But you guys are, obviously you're educated and you got a degree in this, and you're teaching in places where you have a certain amount of respectability and that sort of thing, whereas you're not, you know, waiting tables or
walking dogs. Not that there's nothing wrong with doing those things, but we actually look at teaching and being musicians as parallel careers. And one complements the other. And we are very passionate about teaching, and we're very passionate about being musicians. And that requires, both of those things require the best of us in order to be effective and to feel fulfilled by it. So, you know, we don't sleep very much, and we drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah.
You have to be smart. You know, honestly, you have to be very smart with your time. You have to plan. And you have to be efficient. And, you know, we rehearse twice a week. We make the best of that time. We're in constant communication with each other. If
Maybe
I showed you the
much.
Text string on our phone, it's hilarious how many texts we fire off back and forth. But we work in concert with each other, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. And you make it work. There's no other way to do it. I won't tell you that it's always easy. Like, even today, it's, you know, we basically came right from teaching to be here. And at home, thankfully, all three of us have really supportive families and husbands in particular who just are our biggest fans. They are totally 100% behind us and actually have contributed in their own respective ways to this project. For sure.
Well, also, what does this say to some of the kids you teach? I mean, what it's they clearly know that you guys do this. You have done, for instance, the Ghostbusters thing was mm-hmm. born out of, and we'll get to that, but that was born out of a situation where mm-hmm. you worked it up for a school presentation, right? And I think it's a sign to them that, you know, you can kind of do anything you want. That
I feel like it's like we're teachers and we play music, but it's all just this creative stuff, mm-hmm. you know. And even like when you said, you know, waiter, like I feel like I know some pretty creative, you know, like putting everything in you have, whatever you're doing, and learn. And like we tell our kids, like when they're working, you know, if they're not enjoying the rewards of what they're doing, then they have to rethink it. You know,
right.
They should rethink the way that they're doing it. And I feel like just being creative in life with everything. And it's true. The kids see us do this band. We don't like elaborate with them, but they know we do it. They know we're passionate about it. They know we work really, really hard at it. And it spills over. Like we talk about the kids when we're having a band practice, and we talk about the band, mm-hmm. we're at the teacher's room, you know, it's all just like, oh, let's, you know, make this thing as awesome as we can, you know, whatever it is we're working. And I think the kids, I do think they feel that. Like Nicola has she's in the middle of a play right now that she wrote with her kids, and it's just this amazing film about that they wrote themselves and they put together. That whole thing, it's the same way that she deals with that with her. She, you know, the way that Nicola is with this band, it's the same way she puts that together as a producer of the play, and it's all like Joni says, it's parallel. It's all the same thing. You just with kids instead of drunk people.
I just want to.
And they're very similar in the way they behave a lot, right?
I just want to get back to something you were referring to with your son, and mm-hmm. that there is an element, though, that you know you can choose to play for yourselves and a small group of people, mm-hmm. or you can choose to make it grow. And there is an element, the way that the music industry is changing and has forever changed, that we're finding that we don't need a label right now behind us.
Well, yeah, that's the other aspect
to
it.
And so to do that, there is that social media piece, there is that production piece, there is that media piece, and we've divvied up those responsibilities between us, and we are all working all the time
right.
on that and love it.
But it's your thing. I mean, in the long run, I think, and there are a lot of artists now because I'm older than all you guys, but we've all been around long enough to know of a time when the thing was to get a label deal And then you've got a push, you've got a marketing push, you've got, you know, a financial thing, you've got people making videos for you. And then, you know, none of those people, they might sell millions of records and they're still not making any money and they're working their asses off and they're famous, but they don't feel like they own anything and it's not their product. And that's become very different now. And there's some very high profile artists who have said it's harder because it's more work, but I get to keep it. I mean, is it?
Well, first of all, no label is going to touch a band that's not doing all that on their own anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, because that's how it is now.
Yeah.
Now, like, if you want to be a musician with an original project, you've got to do that regardless.
Right.
And the other thing is that there are, I forgot what I was going to say.
I wanted to interject that. I mean, we live in a time now because of social media and the internet where geography is much less of an issue.
Right.
So whether you're in New York or in LA or wherever, that people are much more connected. You, as an artist, we have never had more control, creative control over our material than people have right now. But it also means that there's a lot more volume out there.
Right.
So, and like Lisa said, what label is going to pick up a band that isn't willing to hustle? So we figured out pretty early on we were going to have to do that. And what we found was we can be incredibly productive, the three of us, in addition to the music and all the other ways that the band needs to be served. There is social media, there is booking gigs, there is doing a website, there's, you know, merchandising, all of those things. And when you do them effectively, you can actually get a lot of people interested in what you're doing.
And ultimately, you know, like you say, because of the way the internet has changed things, if you're good and you're compelling and you're interesting and you're you know, a little different or whatever, the audience will find you.
Yeah,
I mean, you do
absolutely.
All that work, you certainly put it out there, that's a certain level, but the audience will decide, the world will decide. And they'll start to gravitate to you. It's the greatest kind of grassroots way of...
It's like the long tail. You know that long tail book? Like with the idea that it used to be, like you were saying, that you'd have a handful of bands that made a ton of money, that sold a ton of records, and now what we have is a ton of bands that sell less records.
Right.
So we like it better because, honestly, a label probably wouldn't really be interested in us. I don't know, but we're at the mercy of labels finding you as opposed to now. It's like, you know what? Screw you. We're going to do it ourselves.
Right.
You know, and it's like, it's empowering and it's pretty cool.
Well, exactly. When you can do it on your own terms and you still feel like you're doing, you always get to play what you want to play and you're still watching your audience build and you have these kind of little victories along the way, like the movie soundtracks, the Santa Clarita Diet, which they're featured on that soundtrack and people come to your shows, which is what it's all about. I mean, really, the biggest kick is you guys play live, right?
A lot.
And you get
that
vibe.
Right. With all the different priorities Joni just mentioned, marketing, website, and all that, what we always say between us and always agree on is our live show and the musicianship we have, not just now, but in the future. And we're very clear with each other on how to grow and what it looks like. And in fact, every time we record, we actually use that experience to really listen to ourselves and get the data from recording.
It's true,
though. As a drummer, man, it's brutal. there's a lot of data there. And we have to commit to our practice and the individual work, too, because, you know, part of the joy of this is feeling the result of putting a lot of effort into it. Mm. And that only comes through dedicated practice, first at our own as musicians and then together.
Mm. Let me go back a little bit to Joni. You and Lisa grew up in New England, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Boston area, basically.
Yep.
Who were you listening to growing up? Bands? Come on. There's a handful that come to mind.
Well, okay. Do you want me to, like, chronologically?
Sure. Jam through them.
I'll try to jam through them. So I was in, first of all, the Meet the Beatles changed my life. I had a broomstick that was my guitar and a mirror and it was awesome.
Excellent.
And I was John Lennon. And, and then, you know, I get older and I was in band. I played the saxophone in the band and I was really into that in music, like, the concert band music and the jazz band, the jazz stuff. I got really into Miles Davis and John Coltrane, maybe like a little obsessed.
Yeah.
Then But I was into like heavier music too. I was into hardcore music. I was listening to like Scott, like Fishbone. Bad Brains.
Where are you getting this stuff from? Is it just your find? How do you find
it's the scene like that I was in. And then also when I was teaching in high school, I had a kid give me a while back Things Fall Apart by The Roots, which was another thing that was just like, I can't believe everyone in the whole world isn't obsessed with this record. Yeah. I have these, like, I take a record and I just kill it. You know, I'd listen to it for months and months and months and just study it and study it. And, you know, and it was all across the board. It really, really was. I was never into like Baroque.
She looked at me when she said
not
that.
Like into that drives me crazy after a while. But like, but seriously, it's such a mishmash. And you know, and one thing about this, I'm in love with my guitar sound right now. And so when we write songs, I just love how that guitar sounds. And you know, Richie Sambora, I love the way he plays.
Yeah.
I'm like more of a sound song guitar person than a solo person. You know, like I was never that. I mean, Eddie Van Halen's amazing, but I was never that into
Not pyrotechnics, you know? But just like good solid.
Jimmy Page, I was really into Zeppelin for a while. I was obsessed with that.
Joni, what about you?
Interestingly, even though we are sisters and grew up in the same house, we had very, very different musical experiences. And probably my earliest memory was the Meet the Beatles. That was, I think I made up a dance move to every single one of those songs. And then after that, it was like Carole King. Loved Carole King and the Carpenters. Listen, my parents would play that in the house. And right around, I actually studied classical music growing up. I played cello and studied that really seriously. So, and that kind of started my love for that genre of music and studied classical voice. But probably my greatest love musically is soul music, old school soul music. Aretha's at the tippy top of the list sure. Yep, and Otis Redding, Sam Cooke, you know, that genre of music, it puts the hair up on the back of my neck even still.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and then, but I also loved classic rock, loved Zeppelin for sure, and actually started listening to more edgier music when I started playing in this band. Most of my life, like I said, I've been a singer and mainly doing soul singing.
She was Annie, too. She played Annie.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was the little orphan Annie.
Oh.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
But and she can recite. Nicola and I, she knows the words to every song that comes
every
on the radio.
Song.
Like every song that we haven't even heard of. And then Joni just starts singing every word. We're like, how do you know the song?
It's
when
amazing.
We're on tour.
Yeah, don't test me on that because I'll probably fail the only time it ever counts.
You won't. It's amazing.
I know people like that. My son is like that. I have constant, the most annoying question I ask him is, how do you know that song? He just rolls his eyes like I'm supposed to. It's from pop to like 40-year-old classic rock stuff. It's like, you know, he's a sponge. Nicola, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, cool. So there's a music scene
Great
for you.
Great music scene.
And so what was the influence on you as you were coming up?
Well, my first show I went to was incredible. The Clash opened for The Who, and I was hooked. It was just amazing. And didn't realize it when I was that young how many Who songs I knew. So I love both of those tracks. I loved all of the stuff that was coming out from like the Talking Heads, and I love Devo, and I love the English Beat and all of ska, but then I love classic 70s rock so much. Just Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, all Zeppelin, all that stuff. And when we went to college back east, fell in love with jazz, so started listening to Coltrane and Miles and all that, and had a different type of education. That was the pre-grunge days, right before I left Seattle. So there were a lot of different influences swirling around.
Where did drumming come in?
I started in seventh grade with a snare drum.
Oh, yay!
That.
And my teacher was actually female. She was the lead percussionist in the Seattle Symphony. She was amazing.
Are there any
pictures? Maybe.
Did
I
you
don't
use
know.
A drum pad?
Much to my parents' dismay, no. And then I played and played, and I played through college, but it kind of killed it for me. I was in the music division. I was the only female in that entire section of the music department. And moved to New York City to teach, too. And I just, at the time, there was so much machismo and just didn't quite yet know myself enough to barrel through it. And stepped away for many years. And later, many years later, when Lisa and I would go to Lisa's shows, love them, and decided that something was really missing, started playing for a few years with a great group of guys here in L.A., came back to it, and then a few years in, that's when Lisa and I started talking. And actually, Lisa is a phenomenal drummer, and for our first sessions, she spent a lot of time with me getting the feel of our music, because I hadn't quite played in the style that we play before, so it's been great. It's been great.
Tell me a little bit about being women in this world, in this industry. You probably have experienced all sorts of interesting response to this. And again, going back to the idea that there are going to be people who view you as a gimmick, or maybe, I mean, do you still feel the weight of that a little bit, of maybe not being taken seriously for various reasons? Or is the world more enlightened now, which I can't even say with a straight face?
It feels like it's a good time to be a woman right now.
Yeah.
It feels good. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of work to be done. But, you know, when we go into... We've had a lot of different types of things happen that, you know, we think... How do I say this? Like, we try not to take it personally, you know, like when things happen and we just see it as, you know, this person means really, really nicely. This person doesn't mean any harm. But that was kind of the stupid thing to say.
Yeah.
Like,
teachable,
for example,
moment.
Yeah,
teachable moment.
Teachable moment.
Right.
Like, for there's a, like, to give you a couple, and the you know, we laugh at it now. You know, we laughed at it then, like in the van right after. But like, you will walk in with our gear, and you know, Nicola will be standing with her gear, and the sound man will say, you know, where's the drummer? And that's right there. That's right there. And he's like, where? I don't see the drummer. It's like, I'm pointing at the drummer across, right there. And
she's the only one in the room.
She's the only one there. Yeah. And he's like, I don't see her. And then she waves her hand.
True story.
Yeah, a true story. And he's like, oh, shoot. And, you know, he felt bad for him because he was so embarrassed.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But that's little things like that happen more than you think. More than you think.
Yeah. This one time, listen, we've had nothing but wonderful experiences with sound, men and women. But this one time, one decided to correct me in front of the audience with the sound check. And I just let it be. But afterwards, see, the thing is, no matter what they say before the show, after the show, they are so good to us.
Yeah.
And genuine and genuinely love the show. We've had great responses. But afterwards, I went to him and I said, you know, I don't, whether it's a man or a woman, correct the person off the mic.
Yeah, that just feels...
That's just polite.
Yeah, that's
and
just
rough. I can't say if whether it was a gender thing or not a gender thing, but it is a performance thing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and I mean, at this, most of the experiences we've had have been very mild and subtle, and like Lisa said, never really done with any malice at their heart. So what we like to think is that there's an opportunity there for us to kind of, maybe they'll think about that the next time. Change their mind a little bit. And we don't make them feel bad about it in the moment, which makes them open to thinking differently.
Right.
And in the very few times that it has been maybe not so nice, and it's been very, very rare, we do a pretty good job of pointing it
Joni
out.
Joni just takes him on the neck and... No.
Yeah, I'm the bruiser.
You're the enforcer.
I'll tell you what, though, Larry. Our kids, we have a lot of students that play music, that play in rock bands and everything. Most of them are girls.
Yeah.
So we feel like, you know, this times are definitely, you know, changing as the kids are getting older and as people are getting older.
The kids don't talk like that.
Yeah.
They don't say, oh, she's a female drummer or a female guitar player. It's just a guitar player and a drummer. And right now, I mean, the fact that we're all women is a little bit of a novelty. But as far as I'm concerned, if that novelty interests you enough to actually listen to our music, I'm all right with that.
Yeah.
You know, whatever brings you to the table.
Well, because you guys can back it up. I mean, you must have had experiences where, like, just even talking about those first few gigs, the residency, where just within a few weeks, you know, you had people going, this is something that is real. I mean, this really is a satisfying experience. I mean, there's nothing like a live experience where you're walking away going, that fucking rocked. It can change your whole outlook on everything.
Yeah.
Music is a beautiful thing,
isn't
it?
It sure is.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the whole matching dresses thing is part of it. I mean, we're, you know, when somebody's, well, okay, that's the third woman I've seen with that same dress on. Suddenly they're going, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm going to stick around and see. And
it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun getting attention.
Yeah. Yeah, let's face it. That's why we do this. Otherwise, we'd just be playing in our basements.
Well, there's an album cover. There's an album name right there. It's fun getting attention.
It makes it really easy to get ready for any gig.
Yes.
And on Joni's dress really stinks right now.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, apparently it didn't dry all the way in the dryer, and now it's like I'm tortured by it. I mean, I really want to thank Lisa for sharing that on the microphone.
Yeah, that's right. Something that no one would have ever known.
Oh, it's not quite that bad.
Here comes the sister thing. Yeah. I see what you're saying,
we
Nicola.
Do it to Nicola,
I see.
Too.
No. Oh, yeah.
I'm not spared.
No one is spared.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the ghost. Let's talk about getting attention. One of the things that can help you just kind of reach that next level. And again, it got a lot of attention because it was a cover and that sort of thing. But as long as Joni's philosophy, as long as it helps you, people find you and listen to your music. But the Ghostbusters theme cover was just right thing at the right time. It's just one of those kind of perfect storms of it was never intended to be anything, but just, again, kind of a fun thing you did for your kids, right?
Yeah.
Well, we didn't actually do that one for our kids. Oh. We played a Halloween show. We always play shows on Halloween. And, of course, we have to dress up. And we thought, what are we going to be? Let's be Ghostbusters. The outfit was an $8 painter outfit. And we printed out the emblem and taped up ourselves up with masking tape. So, you know, when you asked, how do we manage doing all that? Well, we went for the simplest route on that one. But thought for the show, it's a big, going to be a packed house. Let's learn the theme song.
We didn't go as sexy Ghostbusters.
No, yeah. We're sexy Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that would look like, actually.
I'm telling you, that costume does exist, by the way.
Sexy
Ghostbusters.
Sure. I would Google it, except I think the company would flag me for doing that.
And so we played our cover in the club, and it went well. So we went into the recording studio the next week, and we're happy with it. And we passed it along. And we didn't hear anything for 6 months. And then we got this call that not only did we get a call, but we needed to finish a contract within 2 hours, which meant we had to find a lawyer.
It must have been a massive contract. This was a major studio, and it must have been overwhelming.
Well, the funny thing,
because that's the kind of thing you kind of want to read.
Joni mentioned that we were always texting.
Yeah.
And for some reason on that day, I was locked into a several hour meeting, and Joni was teaching back to back classes, and Lisa had all the information to herself.
Like,
and she's like,
Where are you?
I have something to tell you.
Yeah, it's like,
so
when
the
we don't
one
hear
time
back
she couldn't get hold of us.
Because they were literally slapping this on to the end credits, like in the final mix, the final cut.
I think what
cut.
Happened was, I think they had it, when they heard it, they just, it was like a stroke of luck that it matched the vibe of the movie.
Totally.
That's the vibe they were looking for. So we just got super lucky, and I think that's what placements are all about. You know, it's like these music supervisors, or directors in this case, are just looking for the right match. Mm-hmm. They're not doing favors. They're just looking for the perfect song.
Right, right.
So we got super lucky.
And then they heard the story about you guys, too, and it was just like, what a great fit.
Yeah, they fell in love with our story too afterward. And I mean, the music, everything was done in the movie. They just, like you said, it was kind of an afterthought, but they fell in love with it. And it doesn't hurt the fact that the movie had the cast was led by all women, and it was a very fortunate coincidence that we also happen to be an all-female band, but that was not a good enough reason for them to pick the song. They fell in love with the song.
Yeah.
They didn't know our story.
Yeah.
They first chose the song,
right.
And then we got to know them.
That's great.
And now we know them.
Yeah, now we talk to
the music supervisor.
But that got you in front of a lot of people. It got you on local TV shows and a bunch of radio. I mean, it really exposed you guys in a big way. Tell me some of the experiences of that, of where you ended up playing. I mean, some strange places you ended up getting to play live.
It just bumps you up credibility-wise. Yeah. You know, all of a sudden, I mean, you know, before you were saying that people will find you if you're good, but they only find you if you get in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel like Ghostbusters just put us on the map, really, in a lot of ways, in a lot more places than we already had been, including Children's Sirius Radio. We went to number one with that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's crazy.
Great.
Yeah.
And in a lot of TV and a lot of press and people just really started paying attention to us more, which got us better gigs, better everything, you know?
Well, even though it was, there was some of it was coincidence, just to kind of allude to what Lisa's saying, it wasn't an accident. I mean, it was in that, I think it was Jefferson said, the harder I work, the luckier I get.
Right.
You know, it's something along those lines where this, the music ending up in the hands of the right people is one example of a thousand times
exactly.
that we have done that very thing.
Exactly.
And you just never know the dot that's going to get connected. So you just have to be constantly throwing things
even
up
you
all the
right
time.
Now. Like, yeah. You and I met a long time ago. And now when I saw you, I'm like, oh my God, you know, there's a. Who knew?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like a Wednesday at the Sagebrush, you know, would turn till now.
I know.
It's crazy.
I think, you know, I've done enough of these where I talk to mostly people in a creative situation. Usually the path is what they thought they were going to be turned into something completely different, but completely as satisfying. I mean, an actor who thought he was going to be dramatic and ended up doing comedy, a guy who studied Antonioni and thought he was going to be a serious director and worked on Friends and Will and Grace, you know, those kind of things, but ultimately found what they belonged doing. And it sounds like that's exactly. And the other thing that is a clear thread in these podcasts is work ethic, is that you really do yeah. have to put the time in.
You
the
really
overnight
do.
Sensation is first a fallacy. Mm. And second, rarely really happens that way.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hours putting in the time in your craft and also just the passion to keep going even when it feels like it's just not working.
And even if, like, the overnight sensation, you get to that sensation part, and if you don't have a work ethic that you're used to, it doesn't last long.
Right. Mm.
It's even harder when you're there in
harder,
a lot of ways.
Harder to stay at the top than get to the top.
So what do you guys see as the future? Nicola, what would you like to see this develop into? Because you have said these are parallel paths. You've got this professional life and this music life. But how would you like to see this grow?
Well, you know, we've put many years into teaching, and we love it, as we have for music. The reality is that the relationship we have with one another is something we really, really cherish. So along with what you're saying with work ethic, too, there are very real relationships here. Mm. We are open. We are working as hard as possible to create as many opportunities for this band. And if some amazing life experience were to come our way, we would look at that, because we are always going to be teachers. You teach your whole life. It's a very, very long career. But if an amazing opportunity or moment came, we would recognize it for what it was and take a beat and talk to each other about that. So again, we have the say yes attitude for life experiences, recognizing we have this moment now. That's our answer.
That's great.
And we don't say yes to everything anymore.
No. We don't, actually.
I was going to say.
We have to start saying no because it got a little
too
much.
We do need to sleep occasionally. Yeah.
So you're saying, so birthday parties, unless it's somebody you really like. I see. All right. So I'm crossing that off my list.
Yeah.
Not get
Larry.
I'd
totally come to your birthday party.
No, I'll play your music at my birthday party.
I love cake and candles. I can't remember the last time we did a Monday night show.
Yeah.
How about that?
That's
even
great.
On tour, like, we will probably take Monday off.
Yeah,
it's not a great night to go out.
Do you get the summertime break, the old school kind of handful of months or a handful of weeks?
We do. Joni and I do a summer arts program that lasts for about 2.5 weeks. So that's in it. But other than that, we're touring for our summer.
Yeah. Some teachers go on vacation and we go on tour. And it's literally, there is like not even a breath between when one thing ends and the next begins. You know, the school year ends, then the arts program starts, and then we go on tour. But it's interesting, when we go on tour, it's a total shift, because we can be focused exclusively on the band and performing and being creative, as opposed to, you know, oh, I got to do the dishes and I'm going to practice my instrument, or
so,
you know, I got to grade these papers.
It's like you can check out without checking out when you're on tour.
Right.
It's the best feeling.
It is. And we all can be on social media at the same time, and it's not rude.
Are you traveling in some crusty van that vans always end up in?
It's a clean van, this Nicholas van.
Yeah, I traded in my beautiful Prius for a Ford Transit, and we fit everything in it. It's amazing.
But barely.
When we go back east, we get a van. We have been doing a lot of fly-to dates this year with this opportunity from Ghostbusters and Netflix and all a few other things, including the Women's March that we played. We've been flying to different locations in the United States. Once in a while, it means taking a Friday off. And so we have to it takes a lot of time to actually write sub plans. And we get the notes, and then we come right back to teaching on Monday. So when we have summer to be on tour and not worry about any of that, really a treat.
You're making me tired just hearing about it. I forgot. You got to do like the plans and all that stuff. Teachers work hard.
Yeah,
they do.
Teachers work hard.
Yep. It's definitely everybody, you know, everybody there. You can take any career. There's hard work to be had everywhere.
But teachers
work hard. Too. Yeah, they do.
And tell me about the march and playing at the.
I'm joking.
All right, moving on.
We were on tour a lot, and it's another connect the dots kind of thing, where we were in D.C. doing a show, and there was a woman at the show that was putting together the Unity Ball after the Women's March in D.C., and they called us and asked us if we would play the Unity Ball. So they flew us in, you know, they did, you know, and it was incredible. So we went to the D.C. Women's March, and then we went to played at the Unity Ball, and it was awesome. It's incredible. And we had a whole bunch of people because we did this. We used to do this. They're not doing the festival anymore, but it was a big festival in Vermont called the Tweed Festival. And there was a whole bunch of women that came down and came to our show that knew every word to the song.
Oh, man.
So it was like the place was just going crazy. It was a great night.
Yeah, it really was.
It was a great night.
And the march, it was an experience like I've never had in my life. It was amazing. I mean, that's not even... You know, it's like words are feeble when you're around that much energy.
And we had new gowns, too.
Oh, yes. Very
brand
important.
New gowns we bought at...
That's very empowering as well.
And an NSC record for trying them on and purchasing them. Yeah.
In 10 minutes.
10 minutes. And these gowns were like something to be seen.
And they will be. We just recorded 3 music videos with badass bands that will be featured one a week in May. Just a really beautiful production we did last Saturday.
Oh, nice.
Badass band blog, I think, is what they're called.
So immediate future, you're talking about touring in the summer. Nothing set in stone yet, but you have some gigs coming up?
Yeah, we have a few things before that. We're going to be playing on the main stage at the Topanga Days Festival, May 27th. Really excited. It's our first time there. We'll be playing a few weeks before that at the Ronnie James Dio.
It's a Stand Up and Shout Cancer Front.
Right.
Yeah. So we're playing at that with all the bikers.
And a week after... Topanga, again in L.A., will be the Loomis Day Festival in East L.A. So those are our more recent shows. But then in the summer, we'll be in Alaska, we'll be in Arizona, and then we'll be back east, and then we'll be in Indiana doing a series of days at Butler University, where they've asked us actually to teach to aspiring teachers and to put on a rock show.
They didn't have that in the college planning thing in high school.
So we've got some fun things going on in the next 4 months, five months.
Yeah. And the music, of course, always. I mean, we're kind of recording singles right now, one at a time, which is a little new for us. And that part is always happening. The music is always being written, always constantly being recorded. And we're
fortunate to have a studio. We have access so we can record as we make up songs.
Right. And which offers some people something new to listen to.
Excellent.
And hear hopefully all the time.
Yeah. And the website again?
NoSmallChildren.com.
Great.
You know that we have this I Feel Better, and then we're having we have another single called Radio. We're pretty psyched about it too.
All
both
right.
of them.
Yeah, I love Radio. I want to play. Let's play some of that right now, and we'll come back and we'll hear some live music from No Small Children. This is their latest single, Radio. So good.
I'm not afraid to
here we go. A live acoustic performance from No Small Children. What's this song we're going to do?
It's called I Don't Want It.
All right. I Don't Want It. No Small Children. Cross your fingers. Here we go.
Yeah, cross your fingers.
Lisa, Nicola, Joni, No Small Children, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Larry.
You guys literally and figuratively rock.
Ow!
Kids, look up the word figuratively. I think I probably even used it properly. Thanks for being here, guys. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Get a monkey. Get a monkey!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.